WPPB is supported in part by Sotheby's International Realty, with offices in 40 countries globally and offices locally in the Hamptons in Southampton, Bridgehampton, East Hampton, and Sag Harbor. Our agents are local experts worldwide with a clear mission to pair exceptional properties with exceptional clients and offer them superior white glove service. For more information, email Sotheby's associate broker John Christopher at john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com. Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me Maddie Boutreau, who is the Executive Chef of Barron's Cove. Hi, Maddie. How are you today?
Good. Yourself, John?
I'm hanging in there and doing great. Before we talk about the cuisine at Barron's Cove, let's talk about your journey. When did you first realize that you wanted to be a chef?
I was lucky. I was really young. My grandmother was a really, really good baker. So in her kitchen was the first time that I just knew that I wanted to do something with food.
Wow. Yeah. So, but baking is a little different than cooking meals, right?
Very much so. I mean, it's a lot more precision, a lot more patience. But seeing what she made, seeing the creation process of taking these ingredients and coming out with this, her coffee cake to this, I don't eat coffee cake anymore because no one's ever duplicated her coffee cake.
Wow.
So like that's still in my head and that kind of ruined it for me, but right. At the same time inspired me to like make something that was just, that made an impact.
Now, how about your coffee cake?
I use her recipe, but I can't duplicate it. So
is it the love that she puts into it?
It had to be. She made like a sour cream with like apple, and it was like this marble twist in the middle of it. And it was like she made it like an angel food cake, so like bent, so it was really tall.
Right.
And just like hands down, it's never been duplicated. Edith Etter owned it hands down.
That's amazing. So where did you grow up?
Cambridge, Mass.
Okay.
My mother and father were both born there. I was born there. My father still lives there now. I lived there till I was about 14.
So was your did you have mentors along the way?
Well, my grandmother definitely would be someone who, as just a human being, she taught me how to be like a citizen of the world. You know, you had to have a place and have a responsibility. But I was really lucky as a chef growing up. My mother worked in the entertainment business, so...
And what aspect?
She was the director of entertainment for the House of Blues, Hard Rock Cafe, B.B. King's Blues Club, so...
Awesome.
When I was a kid, it was like, what do you want to do? I was like, bartender. Like, absolutely not. Like, how about this? So you go in the kitchen, and I knew I wanted to work in the restaurant business, so I got really lucky. The first guy who took me under was a guy named Alan Riddle. And he was the chef at B.B. King's Blues Club. And this is the opening one out in Los Angeles. So we started moving around when I was about 14. And this is my first restaurant job that I had got a check from. I worked in a few.
That's when you became a professional.
Yeah. I mean, the very first job I had in the restaurant world or the culinary world is I sold sausages in front of Fenway Park. Wow. My father was a sausage vendor. So when I had days off of school, I would actually go. And that was my technically first cooking job, working a 5-foot flat top in front of Fenway.
Oh, my God.
But this is the first job I ever worked for. And he gave me a knife that I still have. I gave him my first knife bag, taught me the importance of working clean, working neat, being respect the uniform, respect the job. And before after that, I worked probably 4 or 5 people that just – I got lucky. They really cared about what they did. I mean, there's a lot of elements in the world of, you know, restaurants that could be unsavory to a young or impressionable. I got people that really loved what they did, and they weren't burnt out because that happens a lot. And they really, really took me under their wing.
Wow.
So I just happened to be the guy. I worked for a guy who used to have like 3 Michelin stars, Carl Fisk, when I worked at the Harvard Club in Boston. And he had gone there many years before because he wanted to work. His wife is dying of cancer, unfortunately, in Boston. It's a great hospital. So he moved from Austria to Boston. And while his wife was going to these treatments, he wanted to work. He didn't really need to. So he was literally 75, 80 years old in the kitchen working on the line.
Jeez.
And he was like, just, you'd only do that if you love it.
Right.
There's
right,
no
right.
way around it.
Well, that's probably why he was a Michelin
yeah.
chef. That's amazing. That is amazing. So did you go to like a culinary school or anything? Didn't have to.
No, I was actually enrolled at Culinary Institute of America in mm-hmm. Hyde Park, and I was going to go. But what happened was the chefs that I was working for at the time in Memphis, yes, I've traveled a lot and I've lived a lot of places. They were the two youngest graduates of the Culinary Institute of America, Carl and Sam Sciarra. And they said, well, here's the book. Why don't you stay with us rather than go to your first semester, and we'll cook through the book with you because we both did it, and you can actually make money rather than take money out and get right. that work.
That was pretty insightful, actually. Were there any challenging things along the way that helped you in your career? Because a lot of times people think, you know, they had a failure or they've had something, but actually it makes it stronger.
Well, when I was working in Virginia, I was working in middle of nowhere, Rappahannock County. I drove off the side of a mountain.
Literally.
It's highly overrated. Don't try it. I hit black ice and I went off the side. You know, it was a country road. Guardrails are optional. And my left leg was severed from my body and my right leg was crushed. The engine block actually rolled, kind of pinned me.
Oh, my God.
So I was expected to lose my left leg and probably would maybe keep my right. The guy who found me on the side of the road is actually an ambulance driver on his way home and happened to see me and, you know, took me back to the Culpeper Regional Hospital. I was there for almost 2 days surgery. They airlifted me to Charlottesville, which is the University of Virginia, and had some great doctors put me back together.
So they took the leg also and they put it?
They reconstructed. I have about 27 screws and plates and rods and I think I had like 5,000 staples.
Oh, my goodness.
They literally put me back together. And, you know, I had to learn how to walk again. Both legs were broken. So I was non-weight bearing for about 6 months. And through that, the number one thing that stuck in my mind was I'm one of the few people that actually does something that they are passionate like. I felt like that was such a – it kind of shook the cobwebs out of like getting more driven to having a goal and – not just wasting it.
Right.
So I mean, it was a terrible thing, but I lived. I work on my feet still today.
And you don't feel any, because I mean, basically being a chef, you're on your feet all the time. There's no pain that's.
There's pain, but I'm actually in more pain when I sit down at the end of the day because it kind of grabs as I'm standing upright, just the way my legs. I mean, I'm not really a tall guy.
Mm-hmm.
So like with the way my legs stand, I'm not in pain when I'm at work.
Wow.
Maybe in the head, but that's right. just the core.
That's another story.
That's a whole other thing.
You know, I met through you John David Wheeler, who's going to be on the program. And it was because of you that I became aware of this organization. How did you guys meet?
So I cook on a team called Salty Rents. That was the competitive barbecue team that I cook on. And the captain and founder of that is Rob Schauger. Rob is... he loves barbecue more than I think anyone else. He really is an aficionado of Q. And he, we met at Shelter Island when I worked over at Vine Street Cafe. And when we met, he just said, hey, you want to come to the house and cook tomorrow? I said, sure. And Rob is now, we play second in Whole Hog in Memphis in May. And John and Rob met down there. Rob's just kind of like a magnet. People just come to him. He just loves food so much. Any more information he can get. So I met John through him, and John came up with his whole family last year. It's his first time ever in the Hamptons, and we had him stay at Barron's, him, his wife, his three kids. And, I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Now it's kind of like an annual thing.
Right. Wow, that is great. I wanted to talk more about Barron's, and you just finished doing Oktoberfest, but – coming up, you have will be Christmas, which you were saying is like the high point.
Yeah. Oh, well, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's Eve. We always we're pretty much a really like family oriented property.
And you have a great water view there too.
Yeah. And even in the summertime, it's great because it's obviously summertime. You can be outside, but the wintertime, as the boats kind of leave the Barron's Cove Marina, you can see more water. So it kind of has like a twofold to it.
Right.
But all that being like a center gathering place, whether you're coming in, your family lives out here, or it's where you're putting the in-laws,
right,
is one way or the other. It really seems to be a place that families feel comfortable about.
How can someone get in contact with you or get in, you know, reach Barron's Cove to experience one of your great meals?
Barronscove.com. We're on Open Table too. You can make reservations through there, or just calling over to the actual property.
Fantastic. Matty Boudreau, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher, and we'll be right back with my next guest, real estate instructor, John Vitteretti. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher, and today I have with me real estate instructor, John Vitteretti. Hi, John, how are you?
And how are you, John? Nice to see you again.
Yes.
You're looking well.
I feel well, and it's been a while since last time I saw you.
It has been much too long.
I know. Well, there was a little period there where you took a hiatus in your real estate instructing.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I retired last January of 2017, right? And I've been inactive right through, October. What happened in October was that I had received a phone call from Tim Brenneman, Cook Marin, with whom we started the real estate school together.
Right.
East Hampton, Southampton, and also Melville. Okay? And he said that he was running a 75-hour licensing course, but my predecessor wasn't available for 4 days out of the 75 hours, and could I fill in? So I did. And then he also asked after that, would I be interested in perhaps doing some continuing education in Southampton, East Hampton, because now he was offering classes also in Melville, so that the instructor who succeeded me was being spread a little thin. So I said, as long as it wasn't heavy lifting, I would be happy to do it. Give me an opportunity to make reacquaintances with people who were so kind, you know, to be in my classes throughout the years. So I said I would do it.
And this is what's happening now to you, right? So let's just go back on that little period. It seemed like you had a little respite up there.
Yeah, 10 months.
10 months of retirement.
Correct.
So what was that like?
Well, I had said when I retired that I was going to write a book. A lot of people had encouraged me to write a book. Okay? And it was something that I did have some writing experience. You know, I was writing for Hamptons Online on real estate issues, obviously. And so I thought that would be nice. And I must say that I have been working on the book, and it's going to be 1,000 pages. Okay? The progress that I've made so far is I've numbered the pages 1 to 1,000. I haven't, as we say in the trade, put the paper yet, you know.
But you have the pages.
But I have the pages all numbered, right? So, and also, there was a, my wife had suggested that maybe I would like to do.
Your wife, Carol, correct?
Carol suggested that maybe it's
Let me just do a quick shout out.
Surely, go
right ahead. Carol?
Yes, please do.
I think she's a wonderful wife. Not my wife, but I mean as your wife. As your wife.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's been a mainstay for you, I imagine.
Yes,
right?
Yes, she has.
How many years have you been married?
How many years have we been married?
It's obviously too long because you can't remember.
we'll be going on to 54.
My 54, goodness.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. So what's the secret? Really, let's just get a little personal and find out what the secret is.
The secret? Mm-hmm. Oh, the secret is really very simple. And that is that, there's several secrets. One is that I don't argue. Because if you know you're going to lose a battle, the sooner you lose the battle, the better off you are. Why be all bloodied and then have to surrender anyway? So I wake up in the morning, I start with an apology. I come home in the evening, I apologize again for whatever I might have done, whatever she thinks I had done. And the other thing is that we both have common interests. common interest. We like to do the we both like to walk, for instance. We both like to go to the theater. We like certain movies. The only thing that I would suggest is that you should find someone who enjoys doing the things, same things you do, but in the interest of longevity, don't do them together. Okay? If you do them separately,
you live longer. Right?
You have well, your marriage survives much longer.
I see. Okay?
So that's another secret of my success.
Now, yeah. How long have you been an instructor?
I would say about 20 years.
Okay.
In various locations.
Let me ask you this. You must have some humorous moments in your instructing career. Can you think of any that you could share with
us?
Well,
it depends on how you define humorous. For instance, let's talk about the licensing classes, you know, which, of course, is the entry level for anyone who wants to come into the business. I would say that is the most difficult course to teach. Okay? The stress level of people who register these classes is very, very high. They feel that they have a lot at stake, you know, whatever that might be. You know, and I have literally experienced more than one time, people in the class would become so stressed out that they actually ran into the lavatories and cried. Yeah.
And that's because of what you're saying to them?
No, it's because they don't listen to what I'm saying to them. See? They've decided in their minds, right, that this is more than they can possibly absorb, and there's no way they're going to be able to pass the exam, no matter what I tell them to the contrary, with 20 years of experience. Right? They've already determined this in their minds. I've had people who were taking a class in Southampton and drove out to East Hampton, where Tim Brenneman is, to say, I can't possibly do all of this. I don't know how I can possibly get through it. You know? Despite that, the failure rate is very, very low.
And that's because you're such a good instructor.
Well, whatever the reason, I mean, that's the fact is that it's very, very low. You know, and they also do well on the state exams. So I've already said to Tim, for instance, that I'd be very happy to come back and do the continuing ed because you're dealing with people already in the business. They're much more relaxed. It's more like it's a very congenial kind of environment.
They're over the hump, so to speak.
Well, they're over the hump. They're not under the pressure of passing exams. They've been with me before. You know, they know what to expect. And it all works very nicely.
Now, but one of the things you're also going to offer, I understand, is tutoring.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I have been asked from time to time to do tutoring, and I have done it. And that would be after they have passed their school exams, because they have to pass a school exam before they can go on to take the state exam, is that I have in the past tutored those who had to take the state exam in either the initial licensing or for the broker. So that's something that I would be willing to do. I've done that before.
So how does someone get in touch with you for tutoring?
My email.
And which is?
JVITERI1@optonline.net.
Okay, one more time.
JVITERI1@optonline.net.
John Vitoretti, I'm looking forward to your continuing as a real estate instructor and with Tim Brenneman at Cook Moran, continuing with the school. It's been a delight having you on the program. We'll be right back after this short break with our next guest, top West Hampton broker, Deirdre DeVita. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me top West Hampton broker, Deirdre DeVita. Hi, Deirdre. How are you today?
I am well. Hi, John. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Deirdre, like always. You've been on the program before, you've seen the market change from last time to now where we are today. But I'll ask you that question later. Right now, I was thinking about how the word Hampton is in West Hampton and Hampton Bays. And back when I was starting in real estate, a lot of people considered anything west of the canal as not being part of the Hamptons. What are your thoughts about this? Do you think it's changed now? Do you think we're getting more people saying, okay, West Hampton, Remsenburg, Quogue, it's all part of the Hamptons?
Yes, it's definitely changed. And it's always been the Hampton, by the way. These are all parts of Southampton Township.
That's true.
And it's interesting because when I started in the business, which was 10 years ago, we were definitely off the grid of many people who were looking to buy or, you know, rent in the Hamptons. And I was looking around at the beautiful beaches, you know, the quaint Main Street with the lovely coffee shops, and wondering why they didn't get it. It took some publicity from validated sources, and a lot of that came our way in 2014, where people started to say, hey, you know, you don't have to drive so far to get your fabulous Hampton home. There's better values there. There's not as much congestion. That publicity and the sort of stamp of validation from these bigger media outlets tangibly affected our market from that moment until now. I'm still working with people that are a direct result of that publicity.
That's amazing. Now, that's kind of interesting because it leads into my next thought that there's been, and you can tell me, do you think there's been a migration of people from east of the canal going to west of the canal because of the things you just mentioned?
We've seen some of that, yes. You know, people who recognize that for what they're spending out east, they could be buying a lot more house and having a lot less of a journey on their laps from wherever they're coming from. And again, as now it's a place where other friends of theirs are starting to live, they feel comfortable in the area and they're getting to know it, which
right.
is great. I always felt this would happen, and it's nice to see it. It took
a while. Right. Well, one of the things I always found, actually this past summer, I was driving around Quogue, and I was just amazed that it was summertime and there was hardly any traffic.
Yeah, it's very, you know, we're still west of the bottleneck there.
Well, isn't there also because there are three roads going in and out?
Yes, that's part of the reason. You know, we have the Montauk Highway is one. Way up north of that is Route 27. And in general, in most of the hamlets west of the canal, Main Street is south of the highway by a mile or so of the Montauk Highway.
So you don't have the congestion that we have here.
Exactly, where they all merge into one street.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And then people are trying to get from Bridgehampton to Southampton, and it's like taking them forever.
Yeah. It's a really good advantage to our area.
Yeah, that's great. Now, something that's, you know, a lot of talk about the tax reduction, and one of the things they're talking about Congress especially is eliminating the mortgage deduction mm-hmm. for second homes. If that happens, what do you think how that will affect our market?
Well, I think it will affect some of the buyers that are looking to buy in the Hamptons because houses are expensive, and it's very, you know, almost all the mortgages that get done are jumbo mortgages. But I think it'll affect it less than some may expect because we have very sophisticated buyers who are savvy regarding their finances. That's how they're able to afford these properties. And we find that a lot of them who are financing are doing so on a discretionary basis, especially when you get into the higher ticket numbers. So they're going to finance the house if it works for them. If not, they're going to find another way to buy it.
Right. Well, do you still see people paying cash as compared to going for a mortgage?
Oh, absolutely. And most of the big ticket deals that we do are cash deals.
Right. And then what happens a lot of times just because their financial advisors probably suggest refinance after they've bought the house.
You know, or sometimes they'll seek a mortgage, but it won't be a contingency in their deal.
Oh,
because
right.
because if money is cheap and the circumstances are right, then they'll do it because it makes sense for them.
Absolutely.
But again, it's discretionary.
Right, absolutely. So there's a big controversy on the hills in your area. A lot of us are not aware of what that is, and why is it so controversial?
Well, I find that any proposed development in the Hamptons is controversial. You know, each hamlet fiercely protects its character, and a lot of residents who are out here have a long history and families that have been out here for a very long time, and they want to see the area's character preserved. So that's actually something good. However, you have to consider each thing on its own merit. The Hills is a proposed development that would be a resort for members only, a golf course and townhouses and condos. and freestanding houses as well, that would occupy several, you know, many acres in East Quogue. It's a development that would render less than the as-of-right zoning number of houses on the spot, which is, you know, appealing because there would be less density there. But it would require a change of zoning to make it happen. And that's something that people are very suspicious of in general, and rightly so. Zoning is a big plan that has been thought out on a town-wide scale, and people buy their property based on knowing that, you know, oh, across the street it's zoned residential. You know, I'm okay to buy here. So, you know, there was a big hearing last night, the final hearing regarding this matter. I was not able to be there, but I know it was very well attended and went on for more than 4 hours, I understand. Again, another sign of our community-minded Hamptonites, which is something great. I think it's a very close call for many people. I've been really on the fence regarding this matter. Not that I have a say in it necessarily, but you know, we do vote for our town trustees, and they're going to be voting on this before the year is out and before the board changes over.
Well, speaking before the year is out, you were on the program before, and you gave us some thoughts about the summer season, and now we're heading into winter. What do you think of the market, especially west of the canal, what's going to happen going on through the winter and into 2018?
Well, I'll say that our second and third quarters in our area were good. We have higher sales volume, higher sales prices, medium and average, for the past two quarters. And for several quarters, we've had a very large proportion of all the sales in the Hamptons on the west side of the canal. This past quarter, it was 30%. Hmm. Isn't that surprising?
That is.
30% in the West Hampton area, and then you've got all the other Hamptons making up the balance. Though this past quarter...
Well, this follows along your thinking from before, from 2014, all of a sudden the influx.
Yeah, it's tangible. It's, you can see it in ink, you know, right, when we get these reports, which is very satisfying, I got to tell you. When you're thinking something's happening and then it's confirmed in the future, it feels good. But of those 30% in the West Hampton area, what is striking to me, that all of the sales were under $5 million, and most of the sales were in the up to $1.5 million range. That's where 80% of our sales are done, and that's where our bread and butter business
really
is.
Done.
I know that we have some big ticket deals already pending and already done in the fourth quarter. So we're going to see some very nice numbers on the higher scale,
right,
at the end of the year. But I think moving forward, we have some pent up buying demand still. I'm working with people who haven't found that perfect spot yet. I think the start to the year will be good.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you also. Deirdre, it's been a delight having you on the program. How can someone get in touch with you to get your expert real estate advice?
Well, they can always find me on my website, DeirdreDeVita.com, or by calling me at the office.
Okay. Which
631-288-5409. That's my direct line at Brown Hare Stevens.
That's fantastic. Deirdre DeVita, it's been a delight having you on the program. You've been listening to Real Life on WPPB, the only NPR station on Long Island.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You've been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people about the places and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, associate broker with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com. Real Life with John Christopher is also brought to you in part by Quantic Bank's lending division that services all of Long Island, Connecticut, and New Jersey. The bank's loan program and services are customized to the individual borrower, including residential, commercial, reverse mortgages, and their community development light doc loan program. More information at Quantic Bank's lending division, toll free, 888-954-7463, NMLS 403-503, Equal Housing Lender.